And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
You are now tuned into anything potable, the most honorable, the most audible. Hold the applause, like Paul Pierce when he was fresh out the hospital, like Antoine when he shimmied after shots went through.
Welcome to Anything Is Potable, the Boston Celtics podcast here on the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm your host, Sam Jam Packer, professional sports fan, and I'm joined, as always, by the kid, the god, the legend himself, El Nino, who's joining me after a treacherous journey through a Miami flood, but he is here.
It was crazy, man. It was nuts out there. A bus got stuck, and it was just pure chaos because the bus was, like, cutting off the entrance to the bridge that everybody needed to go across. And it was sheer chaos. There were people trying to drive around the bus through the rain. There was a huge flood and some of the cars that were trying were getting stuck. And it was sheer madness. I'd never seen anything like it.
It's wild. Miami infrastructure already not great to begin with, but really besides the point, we got off on the wrong foot here. The Celtics avoid getting swept by the Miami Heat and played their best, I think, complete basketball game so far in this postseason. Maybe game seven was better, but that was against a joke of a 76ers team. But they absolutely dominate the Heat in the second half. Jason Tatum goes off, I think, scoring 24 points in the second half, and just the shooting splits for the series. Caleb Martin was no longer the best player in the series, which I thought was a big adjustment the Celtics made, and not letting Caleb Martin be amazing, but just the Celtics generated a lot more threes, made a lot more threes, and in the second half were able to just force a lot of Miami Heat turnovers, and they were the ones scoring off turnovers. You were in the building. What was the kind of the big shift for them in that second half, and what allowed them to kind of play such like Celtics basketball?
I just thought they trusted each other, and that sounds like such a simple concept, but like, the biggest piece of the first half was, like, they had eight turnovers. They got down nine at one point, and they still kept trusting the game plan. Like, I thought Jaylen Brown, he didn't have great stats. This was by far the best game he's played in the series. He was just so patient getting to the paint and then spraying out. And I just thought everybody had that mentality where it was like, doesn't matter if I make a play. The key is making a play for the team. I thought they finally moved the ball side to side against Miami, and then they were just tough. Like, that play when Max Strus got blocked by Jason Tatum. So the whole sequence was crazy. So
after two offensive rebounds,
Derek White goes in for a layup, misses it. I think it was Gabe Vincent comes back with a lefty layup, makes it. And then I forget what else happened. And then Max Strus gets the third chance or fourth chance three after Tatum hustled to block him. And it just went right back to Strus and he drilled a three, and that made it nine. And the Celtics really could have folded at that point. Like, and they didn't. And I thought from then on, they played the best half. It was just beautiful basketball, especially in that third quarter. It was just, that's exactly how they want to play, spacing the court, finding the open shooter. And I just thought, like, the trust in the pass and the quality of shots, even though they've missed a ton of threes in this series, it's so different when it's a rhythm three. And that's what I thought they did to Miami to take away that rhythm from Miami tonight. Like, they ran guys off the line. They made them think a little bit. And then the Celtics were able to produce those rhythm threes. And I thought even in the first half when they didn't shoot as well, they were able to do that. And then in the second half, they just started making them.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what the numbers are, but it felt like the Celtics got a lot more just opportunities from the corners. In the corner threes is what is like the Celtics have been just that what made their offensive start at the start of the season was just getting great looks from corners, and I thought they did a good job of that tonight. Just answering the Miami runs, though, I also thought they were pretty resilient in that regard. I mean, starting the third quarter on a 16-0 well, I guess they didn't start on a 16-0 run, but having that 16-0 run in 2 minutes and 27 seconds in there in the middle of the third quarter after kind of Miami responded to them initially. The moment in the start the fourth quarter, Jason Tatum's on the bench. It's the Miami goes to their funky zone after not getting some good looks. I still think they actually ran what seemed like a play in response to a zone, which was wild stuff. Overloaded the zone, got the ball to Horford. White had a good look, completely airballed it. Joe Mazzulla called the timeout. People were rejoicing left and right. And then Tatum comes back into the game and they just run away with it. Like, he was absolutely dominant from that stretch forward and just matched Jimmy Butler, who is really the only Heat player who kind of showed up offensively in the second half. That was the biggest thing. The Heat, I think, in the third quarter missed a lot of shots in the paint, but it just definitely felt like if the Celtics were a lot more connected defensively and they were the team forcing turnovers, and just the Heat, I think, what was it? The Celtics scored like 27 or 26 points, something ridiculous off of the Heat turnovers. And they were, it's just a level of making the Heat uncomfortable in the second half of game four, which the Heat were just not uncomfortable, at least at all in the games two and three, maybe the first half of game one. But the Heat offense kind of looked pedestrian in that second half in a way that it hasn't looked for the first three games of the series.
Yeah, and I thought Robert Williams, his defense was way better. Just way better.
The whole team was way better, just like not jumping on pump fakes, like staying down multiple times. Like in the first half, I think they fouled a lot, but it just felt like they were a lot more disciplined in their defensive containment and just like not, even though they were called for a lot of fouls, I still just think the concentration just felt there.
Yeah, and Jimmy like started to take over the game a little bit at the end of the third quarter, try to take over the game, and got to the rim a few times, drew some fouls, and the Celtics just kind of fended everything off. I thought they were able to give enough help on Jimmy to make him at least a little uncomfortable while also getting out to the shooters and making things tough on them, which is really tough, like especially with guys like Martin and Vincent who have just kind of touched God in this series and just been unbelievable. They started the game, I think they were 7 for 9 combined at one point.
Of course they were.
For 18 points. Naturally, they were 7 for 9. But I thought even early on, like the Celtics made them do tougher things. And then I thought Jaylen Brown's defense in the third quarter was really important. I thought he took it on himself to make things tough for Gabe Vincent. And he got it in the passing lane that one time. He got some stuff going in transition, and
it felt like their hands were a lot more active too. Like they're just like getting steals, deflections. I thought Robert Williams had some good plays just with quick hands and just playing a lot faster, despite they kind of fell back into that kind of slow it down prevent offense late, but then they created a turnover. Marcus played fast.
That was an awesome moment because Rob Williams looked like he was telling Marcus to slow down and Marcus like just waved his hand like, no, we're fucking running, man. We're running right now. Sorry, Grandy. And then he found Jaylen for an and one in transition, which was pretty key bucket at the time. It wasn't like the Heat were totally out of it at that point. And Marcus's recognition that slowing it down would not be the answer in that moment, I thought was pretty important. And just, it was a hilarious moment to me because you could see Rob Williams like, pull it out, man, pull it out. Like, we got time left. And Smart was like, nah, fuck that.
It feels like every other Celtics player would have slowed it down. Like, Jaylen absolutely slows it down. But like, kudos to Marcus for playing fast because they did kind of mess it up there. I think that's the Jason Tatum showed up in the fourth quarter, which was a nice change from the previous series. Hit his first field goal. It felt like he was just a lot more comfortable and just attempting a lot more mid-range shots in this game than I feel like we've seen in the past. We did see this Heat, like, we're in the zone when he came back in that fourth quarter, and they just, like, immediately sent Tatum to the nail. I say the nail because that's what cool podcasters say when talking about the free throw line. And he knocked down a shot. But it just felt like he was, for whatever reason, you mentioned moving the ball side to side more. But they just, it felt like he, the whole Celtics team, but him especially, just had more room to operate. And maybe that's just like kind of a willingness to pull up and not just making his game entirely three pointers and layups. But just the turnovers from the Celtics, the sloppy dribbling that was there that kind of plagued them in game two and game three was just didn't seem to be there down the stretch of game four. The turnovers all of a sudden went away, and it really felt like a role reversal in this game.
Yeah, this, I mean, the only two turnovers, I believe, after halftime, which was really important. I really thought a lot of that was Brown's willingness to just get off the ball. And I think earlier in this series, he tried to force some things and go into a Heat defense that knows he's going to try to do that and expects him to, and is like, has bodies flying over to try to take charges, to swipe at the ball, to just annoy you, disrupt you, take advantage of the fact that you're trying to be super aggressive. And tonight he was just patient, made the right read. And I thought that really helped open up things for the offense and for Tatum too. And Tatum, like the moment in the fourth quarter when the Heat cut it to five and Mazzulla just ran the play against the zone to get Tatum in the middle, thought that was a nice adjustment because they haven't really tried that much in this series. It's typically been Tatum initiating the offense against that zone, being outside of the arc. And so when they went to that, they got Tatum a pretty clean look from about 15, 16 feet. And that was as big a bucket, I thought, as there was in that whole game, because Miami was starting to take control. The crowd was starting to really believe, and they come out of a timeout and Tatum just gets to his spot, and they were able to generate a pretty high percentage look for him in that moment.
Yeah, and right after that, they just kind of kept building on that. Derek White gets the block on Duncan Robinson. That leads to a Jaylen dunk. Then we also got a timeout mid-offensive possession from Joe Mazzulla, which was...
What a moment.
Not something I was expecting. The play of
and
the
it was
game,
a good timeout.
It was a good timeout. Jaylen was lost in the corner, and it looked like he was about to turn the ball over again.
And then Smart comes out of the timeout and finds... Was it Grant Williams for three or Derek White for three? Like... They capitalized with a three-pointer on that possession.
And I feel like I went out of order here, maybe with the timeout, but Grant Williams, I think, had an excellent game in his block on Jimmy Butler in the fourth quarter where Jimmy...
Revenge for Grant Williams!
I know. It was pretty impressive. It was he knocked down a lot of big threes. I mean, that's another thing. It's like the easy analysis coming out of this game, but the Celtics just made way more open threes in this game than... they had previously, and guys like Caleb Martin and Gabe Vincent and Max Strus and Duncan Robinson did not hit as many open threes, and so just like the percentages kind of, definitely flipped, but I think they did a really good job of creating those options and trusting each other, like you said. And I think Grant, Marcus Smart, Al Horford decided to show up and score 12 points. He took some free throws. You were in the stadium, but they flashed a graphic on the screen. It was his third free throw since March 21st. Which is an absolutely insane statistic.
That's bonkers. And also, like, he hit the threes early, which I felt like was really important because the Celtics got down 9 in the first quarter or 8 in the first quarter, and his threes kept them close when they weren't feeling it. And then the play that I was like, oh, Al. Al's got a little throwback attitude tonight was when he posted up Zeller and just kind of big boyed him. And this has been a season where Horford hasn't even tried to post up much, even against smaller guys. And so for him to do it against the Heat's backup center and just overpower him and go and get a bucket, I thought that was important for the Celtics too.
Something that's crazy, I'm looking at just the second half box score right now. Bam Adebayo only took one field goal attempt in that entire second half. And that feels like it's playing... exactly into what the Celtics want in that moment, because then they basically just have to try to guard one on Jimmy one-on-one, send some late help, and just hope the other guys don't hurt you. And I thought Bam was like pretty effective. One of the reasons this Heat were up six heading into halftime, and I don't think the Celtics have had a great answer for Bam, but he was just not really a factor at all in that second half. And maybe that's something to do with he was in some foul trouble. I know he picked up, I think he finished the game with four or five fouls, but it's still odd to see him after being pretty, I think, the best offensive version of Bam I've seen in his career, for him just to not be there in the second half.
Yeah. Yeah, that was not the best Bam performance. Just one offensive rebound, four turnovers and zero assists, which is very unlike Bam. Usually he's a guy they rely on for the, although he did have one great pass. Like, it was a phenomenal pass. And he thread the needle with a bounce pass back door. And it was just a fucking amazing pass. And whoever it was smoked it. I forget who it was.
Was it Malcolm Brogdon?
Because Malcolm Brogdon did some bunny smoking.
And I thought
Malcolm smoking. That could have been some crucial bunny smoking for the Celtics. He had the two like right back in a row. Back. And one of them was tough.
The first one was like a reverse in his
the reverse lefty. Yeah, that was tough. But the other one was just like, I don't know whether he felt Jimmy's presence and just got spooked or what. Malcolm needs to play better. He's had a bad couple games.
That's a kind of crazy thing, is that the Celtics clearly played their best game of the series, but I don't think that played their best basketball. Clearly Malcolm Brogdon was not great tonight. I don't think, I guess all the other guys kind of had a big impact, but Jalen was only 7 of 16 from the field, and he knocked down a three early, but definitely still didn't have it shooting. And so I think they still have a capability of playing better. And a major change is that after the first half, Caleb Martin stopped being the best basketball player ever, and just and Gabe Vincent kind of cooled down after hitting some ridiculous shots in game three and at the start of game four. I don't know if you saw this in the arena, but I do think this is going to be a big factor moving forward to game five. Is Gabe Vincent, when he rolled his ankle, he was in bounds, and then he rolled his ankle, and his ankle is the thing that touched him down out of bounds. And I thought the Heat having to bring in Kyle Lowry after that, Kyle Lowry has just not been good. He had four turnovers, I think three of those turnovers in the fourth quarter. Gabe Vincent's been very important for the Heat, and it's going to be interesting to see how that kind of ankle impacts him. Because as soon as that happened, Jason Tatum basically called for him, hit a step back three right over him, knowing that he was not going to be able to contest that. And so I think the Heat's role players have been amazing in the series.
They've been otherworldly. It's crazy.
Absolutely insane. I think Caleb Martin, someone tweeted this out at halftime, he'd only missed 13 shots in this entire series. And so it's been mostly Vincent and Caleb Martin, but like, they have been phenomenal. But if they're no longer playing at that level, or if Vincent is at all limited, I do think Miami has a much weaker bench, and it's something the Celtics can exploit possibly heading into game five. But I do think, like, as soon as Vincent came out and Lowry had to play, that was a huge, huge benefit for the Celtics.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll see how that goes. Obviously, he came back into the game, and I thought he was moving okay after he checked back in. But with ankles, you never know how the ankle will react the next day. But obviously, he's super important to what they've done, what they do. And if he's out, that would put a lot of pressure on Kyle Lowry, and even more pressure on Butler and Caleb Martin to just make plays off the bounce and create for them, because some of the other guys in that rotation don't really do that.
What did you think about the post-game press conferences? I was fascinated to learn that the Celtics are not the worst basketball team that's ever existed, and that they don't all hate each other, and that this team doesn't need to be blown up immediately. I mean, I thought like I was pretty down bad after game three, but like yesterday was just a crazy amount of like the Celtics. It's just wild how much the narrative of like NBA playoffs goes in between the off days. Like absolutely the Celtics played like complete dog shit in game three, but then the immediate storylines of like, they need to fire Joe Mazzulla. They're thinking about firing Joe Mazzulla. These players hate each other. They feel like they don't like each other. I don't know if any of that is true, but like, I don't know. They clearly did something and were able to stay together. They had a mystery meeting that Jaylen Brown didn't want to talk about.
They galvanized.
Is that Jaylen's word? They were galvanized?
That was his word. Yeah, they galvanized.
And then he wouldn't tell
us where they galvanized. They just galvanized.
Can you use that word like that? Is that how that grammar works? Normally you like galvanize something else, but can you galvanize yourselves? Can you self-galvanize? Why not? I don't know. I'm asking you. You're a professional writer.
It appears that they did. Whether it was possible before, it is now.
Anything is potable, I would say. But like, what did you just think of their? Obviously, they had the Red Sox quotes like, "Don't let us win this one before the game." Like, hard to like. I don't know. What was just your vibe of being around the team? Them being down 0-3 and then them kind of responding to that with the performance tonight, tonight.
I think it was a really tough couple of days for everyone on the team, in the organization. The Malcolm Brogdon kind of laid it bare at shoot around or at the media availability yesterday. Like, we don't have an identity. He thought it should be defense, which to me seems sort of like a disagreement with what Joe Mazzulla has kind of preached most of the season. And Mazzulla said they lost their defensive identity too, but for the most part, he's focused on offense first for the season with his substitutions, with what he says to the media, with how he approaches kind of everything. And so that felt like, oh, Malcolm not really on board with everything that's gone on. And I think the reality of it is that through three games of the series, Mazzulla looked totally outmatched. The Celtics looked broken after game three in a way that they haven't really looked broken since probably the Kyrie era. Like, was that the last time they just kind of gave up in a big playoff game?
It's the first time since the Kyrie era they haven't showed for an entire game. I guess last year in the Miami series, did they have any big time like letdowns like this? Because I'm trying to think, like, certainly they've been terrible for a fourth quarter or five or six of fourth quarters, or they've been really bad for stretches of games. But this was the first time they just completely no-showed. And it was just startling to have that after being down 0-2. And so certainly their lowest moments completely. But I do think, like, at least he didn't get swept. I think that it's going to be disappointing no matter like what if they lose this series. But to like the Lakers, at least they did get swept, but there was like a close game.
LeBron played great. They
were in
the
every single game, and they had like the effort there. And so, like, to go out as they did in game three was embarrassing. And like, obviously, there's a reason that the media had the kind of the reaction that they did. But I just think it's good for the Celtics to not get swept in these conference finals.
Yeah,
and
looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com /courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Oh, go. You could tell too, like just that shoot around. I don't know whether they really believe in themselves or just like trying to project belief until they did believe it. But you could tell that vibe, like, all right, let's get back to what we do. Let's get back to following the game plan after really like just a total letdown, not just in game three, but the fourth quarter of game two was really, really disappointing for them. And was, they lost that game in a way, especially when it's the second straight game you've lost at home to begin the series, that can really put tension on the locker room with the way they didn't get rebounds, with the way their offense just kind of short-circuited against the zone, with the way Grant Williams, you know, approached Jimmy Butler and nobody really had his back. I think, you know, it just felt like it was important for them to get back on the same page and make sure that if they did go out, they were at least going to do it together. And I thought you felt that throughout this whole game where when things didn't go right, they just kind of kept plugging away and didn't try to force anything, just kept plugging away. They had a bunch of turnovers early. Jason Tatum had some bad ones early.
Well, he did get taken out of the game, and he did not dap up Sam Hauser. He left Sam Hauser hanging, and Shaq highlighted it on the halftime show and said he was a bad leader. So there were some down moments even during this game.
I mean, that could have torn them apart more than anything. Let's be real.
Sam Hauser was hand up and he was left hanging because Jason Tatum was pretty frustrated. What the hell do you think is going to happen in game five? Because I have a small kernel of belief, but then so many people are tweeting about the Red Sox parallels that it's like, I think they're jinxing it too much. I think too many
people. I can't believe the Heat let Alex Rodriguez in the building tonight.
And Derek Jeter. It was Alex Rodriguez and
Derek
Jeter.
Like, how do you let those guys in the building? How do you allow that juju in the building when it's 3-0? I would have had security be on the lookout for any of Jorge Posada. I would have had Bernie Williams. Like, I would not have allowed any of those dudes into the building today. How do you possibly allow that to happen?
Because you just saw the Celtics quit in game three, so you don't even imagine that's going to happen. But I honestly have no idea what Celtics team shows up, and like them coming home feels like a bad thing. They've played such bad basketball in TD Garden this year, other than game seven against the 76ers. And so I still, like, it took them being down 3-0 to play this type of basketball. Is the Celtics kind of effort, focus, trust, continuity sustainable? Or will they come back with it in game five, or was just avoiding being swept enough for them? Because honestly, after game five of the Sixers series, where I had a very strong feeling the Celtics were going to win, I've completely thrown out my predictions or like feel for this team, because I just have no idea how they're going to show up.
It would be utterly hilarious if this team becomes the first to come back from a 3-0 series deficit.
It would be the funniest thing of all time.
Like, it would be so perfectly this Celtics core to have everyone, like, basically has already fired Joe Mazzulla. Everyone is talking about
the trade machine,
how their locker room is just broken, splintered, whatever. And then they just do something so outrageous with their backs against the wall that you can't help but respect it. They still have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, like, I'm not going to let myself hope until there's a game.
Beating
six.
Those dudes in three more games in a row is going to be extremely difficult. But tonight, to me, showed the blueprint. Like, don't freak out against the zone. make changes. Just try to get like an easy bucket if you start to have a drought against that zone. I thought that Tatum bucket against it was really, really big. Don't force them. I really thought like as well as Tatum played, and he was far better than Jaylen Brown was tonight. To me, it was Jalen's willingness to just not force things that changed the tenor for them. It was like that was the commitment to the game plan that they needed. That was using the Heat's defensive strategy against them, because they do have guys who are targets out there. They do have guys who are lesser defenders. And the way to beat that, it's like counterintuitive. The way to beat that isn't by being more aggressive and by trying to force things yourself. It's by poking on their weaknesses and doing it with smarts and patience. And so that's the blueprint. Whether the Celtics follow it for three more games in a row while also holding off Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo and a supporting cast that really feels
confident. Caleb Martin's part of their big three now. I think we have to put him in there.
Caleb Martin is part of their big three.
You know who one of Caleb Martin's like most instrumental coaches was in his kind of development at the Greensboro Swarm?
Nick Friedman allowed that man to get waived.
He doesn't have
who's far worse.
He wanted both Martins. I've been talking to him recently. He's been a big Martin advocate for their entire careers. He wanted them both on the team. He's been very upset he's been very proud of his guy, Caleb Martin, third star of the Miami Heat. But I'm just saying, who do you think taught him to attack off the dribble like that and attack closeouts like that? Probably Cody, maybe. I don't know. But Nick Friedman deserves some credit, is all I'm trying to say.
Caleb has always been better than Cody, but Cody got drafted and Caleb didn't.
Well, Cody pushes Caleb to be
better.
And then
Cody made the Hornets and Caleb got cut. I just don't know with the Martin brothers. Why were they misevaluating the Martin brothers all along?
It's because Nick Friedman didn't have enough of a speaking role at the draft evaluation, I would say. I do think you talk about the blueprint on offense. I think the blueprint's also there on defense, just discipline, and like they need to force turnovers. And it just feels like it leads to better offense just in terms of one, just transition, but it just feels like it puts the Miami on their heels. It doesn't allow the Heat to get out in transition. It felt like every single time the Heat made a big run, the Celtics were there to kind of force a turnover, get their hands in there. I do think the Heat missed a lot of shots in the paint in that third quarter, but it kind of like the Celtics responded and played fast and were able to just be aggressive on the defensive end. I still think they committed way too many fouls in this game, but like they need to show up consistently on the defensive end in the second half of every game moving forward if they want to have a chance of like winning and winning comfortably. It really starts with them consistently getting stops. This is the first time it felt like they were able to do that despite Jimmy having a very good third quarter. They were able to limit everyone else and then eventually get some stops on Jimmy, including a complete Grant revenge block.
Yeah. And it takes a lot to defend the Heat the way the Heat are playing right now. Like, you have to send help at Jimmy. You have to close out to the shooters.
You can't send too much help because then they're going to make the right pass and the extra pass to the other guys. You have to send like help late.
But that's part of it. You have to send help, and then you have to rotate, and then you have to run a guy off the line, and then you have to rotate back. And I just thought the Celtics did a much better job of doing all that tough stuff. I thought Grant Williams was really good at some of that. He had one rotation, I think it was to the corner, where I was like, oh, wow, like that was just a really smart and hard working rotation. And he ended up contesting a shot that probably should not have been contested. Should have been pretty wide open. It just felt like they were more committed to doing all that dirty stuff today than they have been earlier in the series. And it takes a lot. They lost the Cody Zeller minutes again.
they keep doing that.
They cannot win the Cody Zeller minutes.
Cody Zeller's gotten more and more powerful as the series has gone on. Like, he was very bad in game one, but has suddenly become a reliable bench player for them.
Cody Zeller, man. I don't know how they keep turning these dudes. He's only 30 years old. That's wild.
It's
you could have convinced me he was 42.
He looks 42.
You could have absolutely convinced me he was 42, but he's done a pretty good job in this year. He had the and one tonight where Horford ended up yelling at, I think it was Jalen, about something. I don't know what he was, what Horford was mad about, but Cody Zeller. Actually, this was the first time they lost to Cody Zeller minutes, but they only lost, they only won by one in game three.
That's because the bus one boys came in the fourth quarter, really put a
burden, that is true,
on the Heat. Really,
that is true.
Statistics there. We've got 4 minutes left in this Zoom call, Jay. I know you probably have to write tonight, but do you have any other observations, basketball related or otherwise, from Game 4 of the Eastern Conference Finals?
They just need a bit more from Malcolm Brogdon, and then if they're playing small, just feels like it's going to be a tough decision between whether it's Al Horford or Robert Williams out there for the most key minutes. I thought Al's offense especially was really important tonight, and I thought Rob's defense was really important tonight. So Joe Mazzulla kind of toggling back and forth between those options will be pretty important. It's also insane that Grant Williams did not play early in the series.
It's insane that Peyton Pritchard started. Remember when Joe Mazzulla put Blake Griffin in the game and against the Hawks for some reason?
Just insane. And then the other
Mazzulla part is learning. He does deserve some credit, like in terms of like making adjustments, even just with the timeouts is the most noticeable thing. But like, it does feel like he is maybe has some crazy ideas in the early to start a series, but he does seem to like, he's obviously no Eric Spoelstra, but he's like making adjustments as the series go on. And I think like deserves as much shit as he got after game three, deserves some like credit tonight for like making the right play, making the right decisions in game four.
Yeah. Then free throws. Celtics free throws early were just a struggle. They were 4 for 8 at one point. Jalen almost airballed one.
He hit front rim on both consecutive free throws. But yeah, the Heat didn't do some sort of chicken promotion because no one in the stadium got any free food from that.
And then I thought we haven't really mentioned Derek White, but he was much, much better today. In every way, the block on Duncan Robinson was huge. I just thought, even though Jimmy had some success against him, he was far more competitive in that one-on-one matchup today. Forced Jimmy to take tough shots. And I just thought his aggression, his everything was there. And to get 16 points out of him on top of all of that was really important too. But it just felt like he had a different edge to him than he had early in the series. And they need that edge because that's a really tough matchup for Derek White, that Jimmy Butler matchup. And if they're going to give that switch, then he's going to need to hold up pretty well. And I thought he did a much, much better job tonight.
I would say everyone on the Celtics did a much, much better job tonight, maybe except
Malcolm Brogdon.
Yeah, he's really smoked two buddies and then only played 15 minutes because of it. But we shall see what happens with the Celtics team. They force a game five. They have a game five in Boston on Thursday night. Do you think Jaylen Brown said they want to come back to Miami? Do you think if they win game five, the Celtics will play Will Smith's Miami as the game ends?
I don't care.
You don't think it'd be funny? Like, we're going to Miami, you know?
Nope.
Will Smith. What's your favorite Will Smith song? Also, we have a minute
just
left.
Just the two of us. Just the two of us. That's a catchy tune.
It's the worst Will Smith song there is. Actually, have you ever heard the Will Smith song "You Saw My Blinker, Bitch"?
No,
because everyone thinks Will Smith doesn't cuss on his raps to sell records, but he does. And he has a whole song on his first album all about a car crash he was in because he uses the B word and she saw his blinker. You should listen to it right after this Zoom call's over. You want to know why?
Sweet,
anything is potable, Jay. Anything is potable. Listen to the song. It's a great track. It's actually so bad. It's an awful, awful song.
I'll listen.
All right. We'll talk to you guys after game five, folks. Anything is possible.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.